Your silence is commanded.
Please be seated. We're on our third and last case for the October calendar. I'll call 03AP1731 Orion Flight Services, Inc. versus Zabasta Flight Service. Representing Orion Flight Service is Russell A. Klingemann. Mr. Klingemann.
May it please the Court. My name is Russ Klingemann. I represent the plaintiff and the petitioner, Orion Flight Service. We believe that this is a simple case of statutory construction. We believe that the Court, upon reviewing the Court of Appeals decision, will agree with us that there were errors made in the construction used by the Court of Appeals in interpreting the Unfair Sales Act. We also believe that the Court of Appeals lacked competency under Section 227.40 of the statutes to rule as they did in reversing Judge Gritton's trial court decision. In terms of background, let's start in 1997 when the Unfair Sales Act was amended to include a private attorney general provision and adding certain provisions related to motor vehicle fuel. At the time that those revisions were made, the phrase motor vehicle fuel was defined in ATCP 105.001 sub 4 as any liquid used or sold as a fuel in internal combustion engines. What the defendants did in this case, Basler Flight Service, in the fall of 2003, is set the prices for their fuel, which was a liquid used and sold as a fuel in internal combustion engines, below cost. That motivated my client to start this lawsuit where we asked Judge Gritton for, first, injunctive relief, and before we got on to any further proceedings, and Judge Gritton agreed with us, there was a request for an interlocutory appeal of that decision. The Court of Appeals took the case and reversed Judge Gritton's decision. We believe that this case should be sent back to the Court of Appeals or to the trial court for proceedings consistent with the cause of action alleged in the complaint.
Counsel, do you believe that Chapter 100 that you referred to, first of all, I was going to ask you about your competency argument, but I think I'll start out with the question of the administrative Chapter 78 and 100, are they closely related?
No, they're not. Chapter 78 deals with the excise taxes that are imposed on fuels depending upon how they are used. Chapter 100 is part of the consumer protection action section of the code, and it is designed to prohibit the type of anti-competitive conduct in the economy that is subject to the legislature's control in the way our economy works. And what they did in Chapter 78 was divide fuels up into different categories and tax them differently. Red dyed fuel is a diesel fuel. It can work fine in a truck, but it's not allowed in a truck, and it is exempt from the motor vehicle fuel tax. However, if it is used for a highway use, it's taxed at 29.9, and if it is put in the tank of an aircraft, it's taxed differently. So there are different statutes, different purposes, different meanings.
Is there any place where you can point out to me that aviation fuel, other than looking at your brief, that aviation fuel and motor vehicle fuel are together? In other words, I can see where they've been held to be distinctly different, and I'm looking particularly at Chapter 78 talks about general aviation fuel. Why would it use that? Why would it be talking about general aviation fuel in a context different than the what we call the other fuels?
Well, I think they call it general aviation fuel because fuel is used in commercial aircraft is exempt from taxation. So the only fuel subject to the 6 cents per gallon tax is the fuel that is put in the tanks of non-commercial aircraft.
Right.
What the legislature did in using the term motor vehicle fuel in Chapter 100.30 is not adopt a cross-reference to Chapter 78. They did not include a cross-reference to Chapter 340. And as the Kimberly-Clark case says, when you're interpreting a statute, if you go to the context and you go beyond the plain meaning, that you look for omissions of language found in something that may be arguably related. So the omission of a cross-reference to Chapter 78 and the omission of a cross-reference to Chapter 340 tells you what the legislature's intent was when they amended the Unfair Sales Act in 1997.
Thank you.
Let's look at the Court of Appeals decision, which obviously we believe was decided erroneously. What they did, what the Court of Appeals did, was look at, first of all, they rejected our plain meaning argument. We believe in 1997, the end of the century, 100 years almost since the Wright brothers first flew, that the general meaning of a motor vehicle does not have a highway use only limitation. You can add that to a statute if, for instance, you're trying to generate revenue to repair your highways and you want a separate revenue stream to repair your harbors or your airports. But they didn't include anything limiting the phrase motor vehicle fuel in the statute. We believe the analysis should stop there.
Is contrary to, you argue, the common sense, ordinary approach that motor vehicle in this day and age is not limited to something on the highway. I mean, that's what you're arguing in terms of plain meaning?
I'm saying in the days of space vehicles and aircraft and boats and trains and trucks and tractors and road graders, they're all vehicles. They all have internal combustion engines and they move people and things around, that you really shouldn't read it in 2005 and say, oh, I know what that means. It's highway use only limitation. If you want to limit the highway use, add the language. If you don't, it means the plain meaning, a variety of vehicles with motors for moving people and things around. But if you go further and you go to the context and you go beyond plain meaning, where the legislature has delegated to an administrative agency the power to implement regulations, that is where you should go for your first step in evaluating what the phrases, what the words and phrases in the statute mean, if you feel like you have to go there and beyond plain meaning. You don't go to the tax code, and you don't go to the motor vehicle code, which has the rules of the road and the licensing and regulation of automobiles and trucks. You should go to the administrative regulations. Had the Court of Appeals done that first and not last, they would have read the definition. Could go either way. What does motor vehicle fuel mean? It means, according to the agency definition created in 1990, that it is a liquid used as a fuel in internal combustion engines. Period. It doesn't have any additional language and license for highway use or conveyances transported or drawn upon the highways. Those are the phrases from 340. And Chapter 78.
Counselor, what meaning should we give, if anything, to the fact that at least initially that rule that you speak of was not interpreted as including aircraft by the agency itself?
a misinformed mistake, which was vacated within 24 hours. If counsel here was...
If it wasn't vacated, it withdrew the statement from the letter, but didn't make a contrary statement either. It said it required more study.
They knew that an action was pending. We had a 180-day statute of limitations, so we couldn't wait around for an agency to try and decide the rule. What the agency did was basically left it up to Judge Gritton. And he decided...
No, that's not what I'm talking about. I must not be expressing myself very clearly. The agency did write to your opponents chastising them for selling below their cost, but not based on the statutory calculated cost. And in that letter, it was stated that aircraft fuel is not included in the Unfair Sales Act. Now, I understand that there was a letter written, and then that part of the letter was withdrawn from the letter, and they said they needed further study. But it seems that the agency, by the notices given when there were changes in the statute, was interpreting it as not including aircraft prior to that time and in circumstances in addition to the letter that they sent out. What about that, or am I mistaken about that?
Well, the agency, for whatever reason, the investigator, didn't read the administrative code regulation. If they had, they would not have written the letter it was written. We don't know what type of advocacy was expressed to the agency as part of its investigation. We know that we made a complaint, we got a letter, we responded to the letter, and within 24 hours, the language that you were referencing was taken out, and we don't believe that that should be given very much weight here, if any. I mean, under Chevron type of deference, you're supposed to look at what an agency does, and a single investigator's letter written upon limited information does not carry the same weight as the duly enacted administrative code regulation put together with cooperation between representatives of the legislature.
What about the agency's notices that were sent out when the Unfair Sales Act was amended? What about the lack of sending those notices to folks who sold aviation fuel? Am I wrong about that? Or
if every time this court rendered a decision or a section of a piece of legislation or an administrative code regulation was enacted that changed the way the law impacted the citizens of this state, if you were to agree that that's the way this should be handled, that we should always get mail, better certified mail, telling us that now there's a new law in the books that you better be aware of, the whole system would break down. Our mailboxes would be stuffed. We wouldn't be reading this stuff.
That has any inference as to whether the agency was interpreting their own rule as including or excluding aviation fuel?
As far as we know, they didn't have the right database generated. As far as we know, they were limited to how extensive a mailing they could put out. I don't think it's relevant to the intent of the agency. The materials did go to the Petroleum Marketers Association, which includes the people, the refiners and the wholesalers, who are also governed by this statute. So it did reach several important players in the distribution of this fuel and put them on notice. In 1999, when the agency revised slightly the regulations that they were delegated to enact interpreting the statute, they said, if you sell gasoline, you better be aware that there are new risks out here. They didn't limit it to gasoline that is aviation gasoline or automobile gasoline. So they actually did, through their rulemaking process, create the necessary notices. And what we have here is a situation where Basler claims that because they didn't know, they get a free pass. Well, as long as courts have been interpreting statutes, it's been very clear that ignorance of the law
does not go to ignorance.
I'm
it goes
sorry.
To the agency's interpretation of its own rule, to which we must give significant deference. That's what I'm trying to get at. I'm not talking about ignorance.
What the agency did is create a regulation in 1990 with the definition. With full knowledge, as presumed by this court, the legislature amended the legislation, and they didn't change the definition. They didn't create their own definition. It was on the books. And the Wolfram case says that this court is to presume that the legislature knew about an enacted regulation. That's what we know about the intent. A mailing list, I just don't think, is deserving of the weight that my opponents have given it. I don't think the case should hinge on that.
Mr. Klingemann, one of the things that I heard you say earlier was that you seem to feel that we should take a plain meaning approach to the interpretation here of the statutory provisions. Do you still believe that, or do you think that we have an ambiguous situation here?
No, I believe the plain meaning is simple. Motor vehicle fuel, without limitations, when that appears in the statute, is the type of fuel that was being sold at Whitman Field back in 2003. Absolutely.
Well, let's assume for a minute that we would determine that we've got an ambiguous statutory situation. How do you think we should then approach the situation, and should we weigh policy considerations in making a determination?
The policy of the unfair sales, taking that last part first, the policy of the Unfair Sales Act is set forth in Section 1 of the statute, and that establishes the economic policy as the legislature has deemed it. Those are elected officials. And in the State versus Eau Claire case, the Unfair Sales Act was contested. There was a prior version, but in there, this court said very clearly, we defer to the legislature when it becomes a matter of economic regulation. So whether you like this policy or not, we do not believe is before the court today, that this is a matter of interpreting a statute as written in the books. How you should do it, if you decide to go beyond the plain text into context, scope, purpose, go to the administrative regulation. Go there first.
That's what I want to pin you down a little bit on that, because you said plain meaning of the statute. And correct me if I'm wrong, but motor vehicle fuel is not defined in Section 100.30, correct?
Correct.
It is defined in other portions of the statutes, correct?
Statutes, yes.
And then we have the administrative regulation, which is arguably not consistent with the definition in other portions of the statutes, correct?
Arguably, yes.
All right. Doesn't that raise the issue of the ambiguity that would force us to look beyond the plain meaning? Because if we look at the various, since it's not defined in 130, we have to look at the reg, we have to look at the other statutes. Isn't that the way we're supposed to go?
You have to do this, I believe, step by step. I believe that's what this case has said in prior decisions. Kimberly Clark, Rolfink, those tell us how to interpret statutes. You go to the agencies. The agency is delegated, and this is under Chevron, the U.S. case. The agency is delegated the authority to interpret and implement the statute. They created a definition here, which was created 7 years before the provisions that bring us here were put into the statute book, and they are presumed to have full knowledge of that. So they didn't need to create a new definition from whole cloth of motor vehicle fuel in 1997. It was in the regulations that were promulgated directly under the authority, delegated authority. Once you go there, you know what motor vehicle fuel is. We believe that's the end of the inquiry. Only if it's I can't remember the exact phrase. It's arbitrary and capricious and makes no sense at all. Would you do the next step, which was to read 100.20 and find that it had a cross-reference to 340 and therefore rewrite 100.30 to have the missing cross-reference to 340 inserted. What the Court of Appeals did is they did it backwards. They started searching the statutes. They didn't go down the administrative regulatory path. That is how, you know, government works. May I finish, please? So but what I mean by saying they did it backwards is they went to 100.20. They saw that doesn't deal with this Unfair Sales Act, but they went there. It's in 100. They saw the reference to 340. They said, oh, we'll fix this. The legislature must have meant to put a cross-reference to Chapter 340 in there. They just forgot to do it. We'll do it. When we do it, we bring in the definition of vehicle, which for Chapter 340 and the subsequent statutes is a conveyance drawn upon the highway, and they say, now that we've decided what the Unfair Sales Act really means, we look to the regulation and we find, huh, the regulation doesn't say anything about highway. It must be a nullity. If you do it the right way, the way I believe this Court has said it should be done, that's why we think the Court of Appeals erred, is you go to regulation, and if it makes sense, you stop there. That's my answer. I'm sorry, Justice Bradley, go ahead.
What case do you cite for that premise?
Which premise?
That if you go, to the administrative regulations and stop there.
Well, you, when the issue is context, purpose, and context and purpose and scope, I believe, I don't have to say it, I believe it's in our books, in our papers, but you, I mean, they delegate, the legislature delegates enforcement, I think it makes common sense.
Okay, unless someone's common sense.
I'm sorry.
Another person's lack of common sense. I mean, you say, common sense, motor vehicle includes aviation fuel. I say, hey, my kid wants to get a driver's license. Okay, kids, go to the motor vehicle department. Oh, Mom, does that mean I can get my pilot's license, too? Common sense says no to me. You know, so okay. So common sense is sometimes a bit amorphous. My question is, when you have, if you have an ambiguous phrase, motor vehicle, and you have an administrative regulation that defines it, and you have the rules of statutory interpretation, which normally include context and scope and history, purpose, blah, 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 what do you do when they're competing?
It's the Kimberly-Clark decision. If you don't stop at the regulation, if you decide to keep searching, if you put the words motor vehicle fuel and you search the whole, do a computer search for everything in the statute, maybe you do them separately. You look for everything about fuel, everything about vehicles, everything about motor. You're going to find Chapter 340 and Chapter 78. You're also going to find Chapter 939 that defines a vehicle as something that is in the air, water, or on the land. When you do that, and you go back to the statute one more time and you read it, and you find that the statute doesn't limit the phrase motor vehicle fuel, but it is limited in other contexts, then you go to the Kimberly-Clark decision and you say, well, why is the limitation missing here? The limitation is missing because the legislative intent was not to limit it. It's the omission. They could have added, does not apply to aircraft. The agency also could have said, after internal combustion engines, and licensed for highway use. That's the phrase in Chapter 78. And 78 was on the books when the definition of motor vehicle in 78 was on the books when the agency created the definition. By not limiting it, the policy and the context and the scope and the purpose was advanced. And so because there's the omission, you know what the legislative intent was. The absence of a cross-reference to Chapter 340 and the absence of a cross-reference to Chapter 78 allows you to discern that motor vehicle fuel means fuel burned in tractors and sold at farmers' co-ops, burned in boats and purchased at marinas, the marinas on this lake, the ports and harbors on Lake Michigan and Lake Superior and the Mississippi River, the border of this state, and at the airports. And remember, fuel blended for automobiles is sold at airports. It's taxed differently when it goes into the tank. And as I referenced in my supplemental authorities, aviation jet fuel is actually being used as a form of tax avoidance all the time. It's being burned in trucks, as is the red dye diesel. It's not supposed to go in an on-road vehicle. It's only for farming and construction. But these are all motor vehicles, and it's all motor vehicle fuel. If the legislature wanted to limit it, they should have. When they didn't.
When That's did the phrase motor vehicle fuel first appear in 100.30?
In a 1985 act added the phrase motor vehicle fuel to the Unfair Sales Act.
Why was it put in then?
Why was it? I believe it was put in to add specificity to... how did that work? There was a general merchandise provision, and there was a minimum markup added that it covered everything across the board. Actually, without reviewing the act, I'm not exactly 100% sure, but I do know that in 1990, it was defined by the agency without limitation to highway use only, and the act was amended further in 97, creating the private attorney general provision that we have here. I didn't focus too much on everything that occurred in the 80s with regard to the act, and I apologize for that. And my time is up. Are there more questions?
Sure. No, you have 5 minutes of rebuttal, Mr. Klingman.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
Ms. Glenna Laura Renner, representing Basler Flight Service.
Good afternoon. I have 5 takeaway points that I'd like to leave you with today. I think I can make them in 1 minute. I'd like to make them first, and then I'll be ready to discuss why they're important. And I think in doing so, I can answer some of the questions that...
You don't want any interruptions, I take it.
Okay, go.
Before you start, I have a 20 seconds to relax.
Admittedly, Justice Wilcox, yes. Yeah. But Justice Bradley, you had a... Okay, thanks. All right. And 60 seconds, here goes. First point, the Unfair Sales Act, Chapter 100.30, applies to all merchandise sold in Wisconsin. It prohibits merchandise from being sold below cost. But there are 3 products singled out for special treatment under that law. Those products must be priced using a mandatory markup over cost. Those 3 products are liquor, tobacco, and motor vehicle fuel. Second point, the term motor vehicle is used 136 times in Chapter 100, and it never includes airplane. And when a section of Chapter 100 includes airplanes, it says so explicitly. Third point, this Court has held at least 3 times that the common meaning of the term motor vehicle does not include airplanes, and when the legislature intends a vehicle statute to apply to airplanes, it says so explicitly. Fourth point, Chapter 78 of the Wisconsin statutes distinguishes between motor vehicle fuel and the specialty aviation fuel used in airplanes, and that's important because Chapter 78 works hand in glove with Chapter 100.30 to establish the price markups required for motor vehicle fuel, and it would not make sense if aviation fuel is not motor vehicle fuel under Chapter 78 and is motor vehicle fuel under Chapter 100.30, especially when those statutes are supposed to work together, and I will be ready to address that point. Lastly, the minimum markup provisions that apply to motor vehicle fuel have never been applied to aviation fuel, not by DATCAP, not by anyone. And to do so would create conflicts within the statute that does not exist today. And there's no indication that the legislature ever meant to apply the motor vehicle fuel markup provisions to aviation fuel.
Now, there was a minute and 40 seconds.
Was that 40 seconds?
Not that anyone
a minute and 40 seconds.
A minute and 40? I'm sorry. It's Joe Boylan's fault. He timed me. I wanted to discuss why each of those points were important. First of all, we aren't saying that the Unfair Sales Act doesn't apply to aviation fuel. It does, in the same way that it applies to all general merchandise. And it requires that sellers like Basler and Orion cannot sell that fuel below its cost. But the minimum markup rules that are applied only to motor vehicle fuel don't apply to aviation fuel. And I wanted to talk about why. First of all, the term motor vehicle fuel is really important. The motor vehicle fuel markup law that's contained within Chapter 100 doesn't apply to all fuel. Doesn't apply even to vehicle fuel. The legislature chose to use the word motor vehicle fuel. It's fuel for motor vehicles, not fuel for everything. It's a qualified term.
What about the definition that's in the regulation?
Well, the definition in the regulation, I wanted to talk about that because it is not inconsistent. There is no inconsistency between that and between the use of the term motor vehicle fuel as it's commonly known. When we're construing a statute, I disagree that we start with the regulation. First, we start with the plain meaning of the statute. We use the common, ordinary, accepted meaning of the term. Then we examine the scope and the context and the history and the purpose of the law within the statute itself.
All right. Now, Judge Gritton, the lower court judge, said exactly what you said. This is on page 8 of Mr. Glickman's brief. He said, relying on the plain meaning and the definition of motor vehicle in Wisconsin 105.001(4), this is what he said. It is the generic definition of the internal combustion. It doesn't make sense to me that I can ride up it. Now, you know, Winnebago is a boat area. Ride up in my boat on the side of the river, fill up, and not be subject to this definition, even though I have the exact same Chevrolet engine in my boat that was in my car that I just got out of to get into my boat. Now, so he was just talking about boats and cars. What's the difference with airplanes?
Those were really two points. Let me try to take each one. Okay. Here's why Judge Gritton, first of all, he zipped right to the regulation without going through the rules of statutory construction dictated by COLAL, the well-established rules. But Judge Gritton was wrong, and he was wrong in the way he was construing our arguments. Our argument isn't that it's a different fuel every time we use it differently. Our argument was that motor vehicle fuel is a particular type of fuel. It's the type of fuel used in motor vehicles. It's gasoline and diesel, and Chapter 78 confirms that. It doesn't matter where you use the fuel. It's the same type of fuel. Let me give you a real concrete example. When I take my little red container and I go to the gas station and I fill up with gas, it's motor vehicle fuel. It's motor vehicle fuel when it's in my container, and when I take it home and put a little in my car, a little in my boat, a little in my weed whacker, and a little on my lawn, it's still motor vehicle fuel when I put it on the car, in the car, the boat, the weed whacker, and the lawn. It's the type of fuel we're talking about. Aviation fuel is a different type of fuel, and as it's described in Chapter 78, it is a specialty fuel. It is sold only at airports. It is never sold in gas stations. It contains high amounts of lead. It contains special additives to make planes fly at high altitudes and for safety reasons. It has to meet very specific specifications dictated by the American Society of Testing and Materials. And on top of it, it is never sold at gas stations. It is illegal to use in motor vehicles. It's a specialty type of fuel. So Judge Witten.
Are there any other kind of specialty fuels other than motor vehicles and planes?
I'm sorry.
Are there any other specialty fuels other than used in motor vehicles, autos, et cetera, and planes?
Are there other specialty fuels?
So I know what we're talking about.
I guess one of the fuels could be heating fuels, for example, that's not used in cars and not used in planes. We could call that a specialty fuel.
Well, it's the same fuel. Diesel is used. I mean, fuel oil, number two, you can run a tractor with and you can heat your house with.
That's true. I mean, that's diesel, I think you can, but Chapter 78 makes it real clear.
Take my word for it.
Come on, guys, a tractor.
Houses going well, that way.
And again, that gets back to the use of the fuel and not the type, though. You could take... There are people that have taken aviation fuel and put it in their cars. In doing so, it may run the car for a while, but it would violate the federal law that you're not supposed to use that type of fuel. It violates EPA laws, and it probably would burn out the engine. Let me bring an even better example, probably. Remember the guy that put the rocket fuel in his car and he drove it and it flew into the cliff? The fact that he put rocket fuel in his car didn't make his car a rocket, and it didn't make that rocket fuel motor vehicle fuel.
Could I ask you the same question I asked your opposing counsel about when the term motor vehicle fuel entered the statutes, but more important, why it did?
The markups actually came into place in 1986 when it was a 1985 act. It went into effect in 1986. The motor vehicle fuel minimum markup and markups for cigarettes and I believe liquor came into effect in 1985. The statute was amended in 1997 to change how the markups were calculated, but that minimal markup rule that applied only to motor vehicle fuel, that was enacted in 1985 and 86.
And how did it apply then?
It applied the same way it does now. It does now. To apply the rule then, just as you do now, you take your cost, you take your excise taxes, you add those together, and then you apply that mandatory minimum markup for motor vehicle fuel. You did it then just as you do now. They just clarified how you do that in 1997, and they added more penalties, and they added the private cause of action in 1997. But the minimum markup for motor vehicle fuel was in place in 1985.
The language in subsection 3 of 130, that doesn't refer specifically to motor vehicle fuel as the object, does it?
I'm sorry, I missed that.
In 130 sub 3, seems to me any sale of any item of merchandise, either by a retailer, wholesaler of motor vehicle fuel. But why did they do it that way?
It's a defined term in the statute, a wholesaler of motor vehicle fuel. It's a defined term in the statute later. That whole section applies to the whole statute, but the wholesaler of motor vehicle fuel is actually a defined term contained within 100.30 itself.
Counsel, I'm also going to return to another question. Your opposing counsel, as I understood the argument, indicated that if hypothetically the statute were ambiguous, you would go to the interpretation given by the agency set forth here in the administrative code, and then stop. And as I look at the Kimberly-Clark case, it says this at page 466. It says, in essence, that when you have several interpretations and there is an agency interpretation, the agency's construction is not binding on this court. Quote, we have consistently held that such an interpretation will not be reversed where it is one among several reasonable interpretations that can be made equally consistent with the purpose of the statute. Now, I'm not sure they're speaking about an agency interpretation set out in the code itself, but my question is this. Let's say the interpretation that one would have in looking at the code provision is that it includes aviation. That's generic. If you do the Kalal assessment of looking at the statute and the language and the scope, history, purpose, context, you might come up with a different interpretation and a different conclusion. So what happens when they are at odds? Arguably, Kimberly Clark says, and I'm just not sure, but that we would we'll go with the agency's interpretation as long as it is equally consistent with the purpose of the statute. Is the agency interpretation or definition consistent with the purpose of the statute?
Let me try to rephrase your question a little bit. Maybe I can answer it this way. And I'll tell you, we'll go with the agency interpretation here because the agency interpretation here and their reaction and their, as Justice Rogenczak pointed out, their application over time is that the motor vehicle fuel minimum markup provisions don't apply to aviation fuel. So we don't have an administrative, a longstanding administrative interpretation at odds with the statute like we had in Kimberly Clark. But let's say we get to and first of all, when we're interpreting a statute, Kalal and Preston tell us that we don't start with the administrative regulation. We only get to it if we determine that we can't determine the meaning of the term by looking at the intrinsic sources, the statute itself, the surrounding statutes, the related statutes. But let's say we got to the administrative regulation in this case. First of all, the administrative regulation itself, when you're looking at it, it's very important that it use the term motor vehicle in the definition itself. The reason for the administrative regulation was to try to get the fuels that drive internal combustion engines for motor vehicles. So it's important that the term motor vehicle is used itself in the definition. And we know that because the drafter said that. We attached the drafting records for that regulation itself. It's in our Appendix 2, page 214. The drafting records show that the drafter was trying to use the term to be consistent with how that term was used in Chapter 78. And the drafter, and as that term was used in 78 and 1990, just as it is now, motor vehicle pertained to highway vehicles. Now, the drafter was even criticized for using the term motor vehicle fuel. The Legislative Reference Bureau said to the drafter, why don't you use motor fuel instead of motor vehicle? And she said, I'm assuming it's a she, if you don't mind. I'm not sure. The drafter said, it's important that I use the term motor vehicle because in Chapter 78, there are identified in 1990 two types of motor vehicle fuels. One is motor fuels, and that was gasoline. And the second was special fuels, which was diesel fuel. And she said, if I just use motor vehicle or motor fuel, I will only be getting gasoline, and I won't be getting the diesel fuels that Chapter 78 tells us are also motor vehicle fuels. So she was, you can't ignore the drafting record. She used that term to be consistent with the way it was used in Chapter 78. And most importantly, Chapter 78 then, as it does now, differentiated between motor vehicle fuel and aviation fuel. It's also important to note how DACCAP interpreted and applied its own regulation and what it thought the term motor vehicle fuel meant. And Justice Rogenczak, I think this gets to your point. For years, DACCAP, for almost 20 years now, DACCAP has tried to, or it's gone to great lengths to inform all the people it thought would be impacted by that motor vehicle fuel markups on how to apply those complex rules, how to apply the markups. It sent notices out. It created forms. It held seminars, and it did that all for gas stations, convenience stores, everybody that sells gasoline and diesel, those fuels that are commonly known as motor vehicle fuels. And it never sent those forms and the notices to aviation fuel sellers. And it's not because they were hard to find. We all know where aviation fuel sellers are. It's because DACCAP didn't think that motor vehicle or aviation fuels were included in motor vehicle fuels. And DACCAP's initial reaction when Orion tried to argue that those motor vehicle fuel markups should apply to aviation fuel is very telling. And if you don't mind, I'd like to just read the provision of what DACAP said, what its initial reaction was. DACAP, and this is at our Appendix 238, DACAP said, we've concluded that 100LL aviation fuel is not motor vehicle fuel as the terms used in the statute. We base this conclusion on the common sense fact that airplanes are generally not considered motor vehicles under various transportation statutes and codes. Furthermore, it seems illogical that the term motor vehicle fuel, as it's used in the statute, was intended to be used outside of the contents of sales of fuel intended for highway use through the well-established industry of retail gas stations and convenience stores. Now, while Orion tried to get DACAP to change its mind, it never did.
Counsel, if that language is so telling, this is in the letter? Is that what you're talking about?
Yes, it's in the letter.
Why was it withdrawn?
It was withdrawn because Orion called and said, you should look at your regulation, and they said, and take more time to look at your regulation. So DACAP said, well, we'll do more research. But DACAP's informed us that it will not issue another warning letter, and it's closed the file, and that we should comply with that first warning letter.
Is that in the record?
It's not in the record.
That you should comply with the first warning letter?
That it's not issuing another warning letter. That in the first letter it says that Basler has to comply with the general provisions of the Unfair Sales Act. It can't sell its aviation fuel below cost. And the general provisions apply, not the special provisions for motor vehicle fuel.
What would you say propane is?
Propane, I believe, I could be wrong, but I believe that propane is an alternate fuel, as it's defined in Chapter 78. It's not defined as a motor vehicle fuel. I think it's an alternate fuel.
Aren't there what anyone would consider motor vehicles operated by propane?
If you use the definition, it's not commonly used in motor vehicles yet. Maybe someday it will be, but it's not commonly used in motor vehicles yet. Chapter 70, it's not the type of fuel that's commonly used in motor vehicles. It's Chapter 78 doesn't define it in the term motor vehicle fuel. Those are just gasolines and diesels. Now, Chapter 78 does say that alternate fuel, I think those, if propane is included in CNP and LGP, I think are the alternate fuels. In Chapter 78, those are also fuels that go in motor vehicles, as the term is defined, but it's technically not motor vehicle fuel. It's not commonly considered. It would probably take a legislative amendment to pull that into the statute of motor vehicle fuel. It's not something that you think of as common sense. It's motor vehicle fuel. It's not available at gas stations like gasoline and diesel.
Could I ask a more fundamental question? Mm-hmm. Your opposing counsel basically accuses your client of trying to drive them out of business by its pricing of aviation fuel. How do you respond to that?
That this was a price war started by Orion. And maybe it got a little out of control between the two. Both of them were dropping their price every other week against each other. There's any evidence that someone was trying to drive the other out of business. It was just a standard price war between two parties. And actually, the Unfair Sales Act covers that situation in its general merchandise provisions. Basler and Orion are not allowed to sell below cost. So I wouldn't call it was just a price war. There's no evidence in the record that somebody was trying to drive somebody else out of business. But in any case, the general merchandise provisions of the Unfair Sales Act would apply to both of those parties for their sales of aviation fuel, not the minimum markup rules for motor vehicle fuel.
So even if they were trying to drive each other out of business, one or the other, it wouldn't come under that statute. There may be another statute.
No, it would come under.
The markup statute.
The markup statute for the Unfair Sales Act only applies for motor vehicle fuel.
Right.
It doesn't apply to aviation.
So even assuming you're right on that, mm-hmm. but assuming that one was attempting to drive the other out of business, if there was a cause of action, it would not be under the minimum markup law.
Correct. Yep.
That's your position, as I understand it.
If I'm understanding you, I believe that's correct. Yeah, that is correct.
What is the effect of 227.11a, 2a, which says a rule is not valid if it exceeds the bounds of correct interpretation?
That rule, I can't exactly tell you what that means, but I can tell you it doesn't apply in this case because we weren't seeking to invalidate the rule. We agreed with DACAP's interpretation. We weren't threatened with a DACAP application, and we weren't claiming that DACAP's application was wrong. We were with DACAP. I wanted to make a couple other points that are perhaps got lost. First of all, the Wisconsin Supreme Court has addressed what the term motor vehicle means several times. I wanted to discuss those cases very briefly. Gridley v. Cardenas was decided in 1958. The court held that an airplane was not a motor vehicle fuel within the meaning of the Florida guest statute. It applied Wisconsin law and said that the common and approved usage of the term motor vehicle does not include an airplane. That was followed in Neuberger v. Poquist, decided in 1965, where this court held that an airplane was not a motor vehicle within the Wisconsin direct action statute. And the court said, again, the common understanding of the term motor vehicle does not encompass airplanes or aircraft. And Air Wisconsin v. North Central Airlines, which was decided in 1980, the court was addressing Wisconsin Chapter 346 concerning a vehicle code that had to do with right-of-way. The court held that statute did not apply to airplanes, although it clearly applied to motor vehicles. And the court said, looking at that statute itself, we believe that if the legislature had intended it to apply to airplanes, too, they would have said so. They would have used terms common to airplanes and airports. They would have said airplane, airport, aviation fuel. And the legislature was aware of that precedent, the latest being in 1980 when it enacted the motor vehicle fuel minimum markups 6 years later and chose to use the term motor vehicle to describe the fuel and didn't specifically say, and that also applies to airplane. So several times this court has held when we use the term motor vehicle, our common understanding is that it doesn't include airplane, it includes only the vehicles that go on the road. And while time has passed since 1980, not that much time has passed, and the common understanding of the word motor vehicle is still vehicles that go on a highway. Just as you said when Justice Bradley, right away, when I send somebody to the motor vehicle department, we're talking about those types of vehicles that go on a highway. We aren't talking about aircraft. We aren't talking about rockets. And I wanted to make one other point. In Chapter 100, the 136 times that the term motor vehicle is used throughout that chapter, every single time it doesn't include airplane. You can look at those statutes and see that. And on top of it, when in Chapter 100 a section does apply to airplanes and motor vehicles, it says so explicitly. In a good example, I'd like to direct your attention to 100.42. That statute has to do with product safety. It refers to both motor vehicle equipment and aircraft equipment. If airplane was included within the term motor vehicle, there would have been no reason to use both terms. So again, when a provision of 100 means to apply to both motor vehicles and airplanes, it says so.
But I assume when it refers to motor vehicles, it doesn't say excluding airplanes.
I'm sorry?
Nowhere in 100. Nowhere. Point in Chapter 100 where it says motor vehicles, does it say except airplanes?
No, but the common understanding.
That's what you're relying on.
That's what I'm relying on. And also, there are several cross-references. Not all of the statutes are cross-referenced in Chapter 100. They're drafted by different people, but the term motor vehicle, if you look at those statutes, it is very consistent throughout. Those statutes concern problems with cars and trucks. For example, it's an unfair trade practice to tell someone that the sticker price on a new motor vehicle, the manufacturer's suggested price, is the price of the car. That statute itself, you can tell, is talking about the problems of new car buyers face, and it doesn't have anything to do with airplanes or aircraft. And it would be illogical to say that motor vehicle for some sections of Chapter 100 mean one thing, and for others, it means something completely different when the exact same term is used. I think it was Justice Wilcox, I think you asked, why is Chapter 78, why is it disconnected? The answer is it's not. In fact, they have to work together. While Chapter 100.30 does not specifically refer to Chapter 78, it refers to excise taxes. Excise taxes include the state taxes, and where do we go to find the excise taxes for motor vehicle fuel? We go to Chapter 78, so it's implicitly incorporated in Chapter 100.30. And to apply the motor vehicle fuel markup, we have to take our cost, we have to take our and add in the excise taxes for motor vehicle fuel that are found in Chapter 78. We add those together, we multiply it by the multiplier required under the minimum markup statute for motor vehicles, and that's how we get the markup amount that has to be added to the cost and the excise taxes. So those statutes have to work hand in glove. And that's why it doesn't make any sense that it would be used one way in one statute and a completely different way in the other.
Your opposing counsel lambasts the Court of Appeals decision. You prevailed. If we were to decide your way, do you find any fault with the Court of Appeals decision?
I think the Court of Appeals, absolutely not. But I think the Court of Appeals could have been more clear in how it was applied the Kalal rules, how it was looking at the term, how we look at the common and ordinary use. I would also rely more on Chapter 78, the definition of the term in Chapter 78. It's a related statute. I think I've explained better than perhaps I did for the Court of Appeals how they are related. We don't have to. It's an unambiguous term. If we look at the context, the scope, the purpose of the statute, the exact same terms are used in other statutes and used in surrounding statutes. And even if you had to go outside and use extrinsic sources of interpretation, the history, the DATCAP application, and even the construction of the DATCAP regulation itself all support the interpretation of the term motor vehicle fuel as not including aviation fuel.
You view the administrative regulation and interpretation as extrinsic?
Yes, and in Preston, I think the court said that in administrative regulation, it was in the Preston case, the court said that extrinsic sources of interpretation include administrative regulations. Yes.
Doesn't this agency have the power to issue regulations and interpret the statutes?
Oh, yes, they do. Yes, absolutely. But the court didn't leave it to the agency to define that term. And we don't have to go and look at the term.
But if it's reasonable, we take it. There's a deference to the entity who has been given legislative power to interpret a statute and who interprets it reasonably and has stood by that interpretation for any length of time. We generally view that as being given deference, and unless it's invalid or it's unreasonable and outside the interpretation, which raises another question, which is why I referred you to 227. So you would view administrative regulations as extrinsic.
I would, but I think you can also look at administrative regulations and how the administration, how the administrative agency has applied the rule and how it's interpreted to confirm the plain meaning of a statute, and I think you could do that here, too.
And then with these regulations, did they go through the legislative process?
I'm sorry?
Did they go through the legislative process? The regulation is usually sent over to a legislative committee. Did they go through that process?
I don't believe it did, but I do from the drafting records understand that the definition was sent to the Legislative Reference Bureau and that the Bureau did comment.
Chief, if I may.
Justice Bradley.
Thank you. You were asked by Justice Prosser, whether or not you agreed with the Court of Appeals opinion, and you wholesale embraced it with a few qualifications. One of the points made by your opposing counsel is the Court of Appeals got the intent wrong. For instance, I'm reading from the slip opinion in paragraph 1, the legislature intended these provisions to protect small businesses from being run out of business by predatory pricing. Your opposing counsel makes reference to the plain language set forth in 100.30, I think, in some place in sub 2, and says, look, there's no reference to small mom and pop. It can be a refinery. It's businesses generally. How do you respond to this language of intent in the Court of Appeals opinion? Did they get it correct that it was intended to protect small businesses?
I'll answer it this way. I'll take my best shot. I believe what we don't want to confuse the purpose of the entire statute with the purpose behind those special minimum markups that apply to motor vehicle fuel. And I believe what the appellate court was trying to articulate was that the purpose behind those special markup provisions that apply just for motor vehicle fuel was to make sure that small stations got a profit margin so they could better compete with big ticket sellers that also were selling the same type of motor vehicle fuel. And I can say it quickly and best this way, and I'm going to go outside the statute and talk about the reason for the purpose for the rule that's been discussed over and over again by commentators, newspapers. There's an article every day about this law. It's a highly controversial law, just as applied to fuel, just as applied to gas and diesel. The legislature recognized that big stores could sell gas and diesel to drivers at cost or just above cost and still drive to the nearby and still drive nearby gas stations out of business. So they could comply with the law and still drive gas stations out of business because those stations, usually independently owned, they're smaller, they couldn't withstand not being able to make a profit margin. So the legislature was convinced that gas station owners needed that guaranteed profit margin in order to compete, so they implemented that markup, that required markup for motor vehicle fuel, and they made sure that when fuel is sold at gas stations, wherever they may be, that markup is 9.18%. So the purpose behind or the reason behind those markup provisions was that, and I think that's what the appellate court was trying to get at. My time is up. Thank you,
counsel. Mr. Klingman, you have 5 minutes in rebuttal.
I might as well start with that last point. I think it was missed by the Court of Appeals. I think it was missed by the newspaper authors of articles referenced by counsel that in the amendments in 1997, there's a provision under the cost section that discusses how it applies to refiner selling fuel at some place other than a retail station. It's not just small businesses. It's the relative size. It's smaller businesses. If Basler had a bigger pile of money, say, it will cost us $100,000 but by selling our fuel below cost and we will put them out of business in 6 months, let's do it. But if they had consulted attorneys back in September of 2003 and said, we want to drive Orion out of business, we don't like it that the county gave them a lease to compete with us, can we do it? Their counsel would have gone to 100.30. They would have gone to the regulations that define the terms contained therein. They would have seen that the regulation says that they can't sell below cost with the minimum markups any liquid used as a fuel in internal combustion engines, period, and they would have been told that they better not do it. It's the relative size and it's the scheme. What opposing counsel has done has said that there is either implicit or some convoluted explicit through the administrative process cross-reference to Chapter 78 in 100.30 that you can't really see, you can't really read it, but the definition of motor vehicle in Chapter 78 which says it is a conveyance self-propelled by an internal combustion engine and licensed for highway use, is how Chapter 130 should be read. And doing that, they say aviation fuel doesn't apply. Tough problem for them, though. That means boat fuel doesn't apply. That means agricultural fuel sold at farm co-ops doesn't apply. That means all the red dye diesel that's put into all the construction equipment for off-highway use is not governed by the minimum markup provisions. And that just is not consistent with the way the statute was written, nor is it consistent with the regulation. On the competency issue, I think it's important. We referenced it in our brief at page 38. What we did was cited from Basler's brief at the trial court level on a preliminary injunction. What Basler argued is that the DATCAP, quote, exceeded the authority granted by the legislature, close quote, when it created the definition of motor vehicle fuel. This follows the logic of the Court of Appeals that said, look, the statute means highways. Trust us. You look at the regulation, doesn't say highways. You got to call it a nullity. You have to call it excessive authority. At that point where they made that argument in their brief, we believe that Chapter 227.40 applies. They should have asked Judge Gritton to stay the case. They should have moved for their declaratory judgment in Madison. And they didn't do it. And under sub 3 sub C, if you don't do it and you don't do it promptly, you're precluded from arguing it.
But they're not arguing that here. That's why I've been questioning.
Well, I find that the argument is made. I think it's implicit. I think they're saying, when they agreed with Justice Prosser, that what the Court of Appeals did was right, to read highway into it and then create a situation where the administrative regulation is a nullity, they have argued it by embracing that analysis.
Counselor, I don't think they said the administrative regulation was a nullity. They simply say the agency interprets it differently than you do. That's not saying it's a nullity.
Semantics, I believe, but important, because what they did was they put the word highway in the statute and then said the regulation isn't consistent.
Who's there?
The Court of Appeals.
Put it in this. And what does the regulation say?
It says that motor vehicle fuel is any liquid used or sold as a fuel in internal combustion engines, period. They didn't add the phrase and license for highway use because they didn't want to limit it to highway use. They wanted to include boats, tractors, off-road construction equipment, and included in there is airplanes. Thank you.
Thank you, counsel. Thank you, Mr. Kingman. Thank you, Ms. Brennan, for discussing with us today minimum markup laws and regulations. That concludes our argument 038B1731. And we are adjourned for the October sitting, and the court will meet at 3:10 in the conference room.